Shop and Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about front end web design and development. I'm Dave at the homeschool. Rupert with me is Chris in the booth. Coyer, Chris, how are you?
Doing okay. Yeah. Just hanging in there, man.
Fall weather has hit here in Austin, Texas. We went from about 90 degree days down to whatever it is. Feels like I wake up and it's 39. Okay, but it's also a big change for old shorts and t-shirt Dave.
So yeah, it's been getting cooler here too, and I welcome it because I really love the fall, but I am a little worried about the winter, you know, like the Midwest. I don't know what the story is in Austin, but we had our like worst single day of COVID the other day, you know, that we're hearing bad stories about that stuff. I mean, part of this is, I mean, to me is like, well, you know, I don't know. I don't feel terribly educated on it, but I feel like this is like the super highly infectious thing that travels through the air, right? So everybody's going to get it at some point. Like, we'd like to protect the people that need the protection the most, but a lot of people are still going to get this thing. So like the job from the beginning was to flatten the curve, right? So the fact that we're like so much later and still have the opportunity to do that, I feel like we've flattened the curve at least somewhat. Like, I know we're doing terribly, terribly, terribly as a country, but there's still,
yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to thrive on indoors is what I'm reading today in the New York Times, but it's just like, it's that situation. It's like, what do we do for health, you know, of kids and working and all that, you know, still figuring it out.
After all this time.
But we are still figuring it out. So I guess, yeah. And then there's a big election coming up. So that's going to take me out for a week. So there you go. That'll be fun. Yeah. Looking forward to it. So
tricky times. Anyway, it's nice to, I don't know, get a feel for the world.
Well, you know, it's tough too to put on a podcast every week in the midst of all this. You know, and everyone listening too, like, you know, you're probably not listening to this on your commute like you used to, you know, like it's just everything's changed. It's just wild. So I think it affects everything.
Yeah. So we'll take a break and just talk about tech and crap. As we normally
Websites.
Do. You know, I published my, I was, you know, I've moderated a panel between the Matts, meaning Matt Billman of Netlify, and Matt Mullenweg of Automattic / co-founder WordPress period kind of thing, you know, and it was kind of billed as, or at least, you know, it didn't say this on the schedule, but people in their mind were like, this is WordPress first Jamstack, so let's do this, you know, which was brought on by
WordPress first Jamstack.
Yeah, it was kind of, it all started with a post on some website called the New Stack, which the New Stack, imagine they're, you know, less bullish on WordPress, you know. But anyway, there was an email conversation between this Richard guy and Matt, and I got the sense that Matt didn't know this would necessarily be published into an article, but Matt made some comments disparaging Jamstack a little bit, you know, and he since clarified some of those remarks, but has had some new zingers and stuff. Anyway, that's Matt's job. So don't blame Matt necessarily. It'd be kind of a crappy CEO if he was like, you know, what's a good way to build websites other ways than the way we do it? You know, like, that's not good. So,
yeah, it's like, you know, who, I don't know, whatever. You're just like, I think the competitor is the best.
Yeah, it's like the Geico sales rep calls you and be like, you should use Assurant. They are the good ones. You know, that's not good. So, okay, so there's that going on. And all the numbers are in Mullenweg's favor here. Like, you don't see charts of WordPress's demise. They don't exist. You know, they all, it's up, up, up. For them.
Every year, I think it's going to slip, but then they're like, surprise, it's 40%. And it's like, oh, golly, it just keeps going.
Not that the WordPress is above criticism. I think there's plenty of criticism to be had there. So anyway, I moderated that panel. That is not published online. I think the vibe is like, you know, you want to see stuff like that at a conference, then go to the conference kind of thing. Fine. So, but as a moderator, I didn't say anything. Like, I said 10 words, you know, my job was just to kind of move it along as best I could. I don't think I did that well at it, but I don't have any skill in that regard either.
I think it's hard. It's hard on this podcast, like when we've had like four guests, you know, it's like hard. Because you're like, I don't want to talk too much because I invited four people or whatever.
Yeah, the value is their words, not mine. in this case. Mm. So, and then I'm like, if I stop, the only reason I would interject to stop something is if I thought there's more value for the people listening if I get them to shut up and move on to the next thing. But they were saying so much stuff, and I'm like, what you're saying is all interesting stuff, so I'm just gonna shut up and let you talk, because this is kind of the point of all this anyway. It was really short anyway. I feel like a conversation like that deserves almost hours of debate, because it's so, there's so much to say. Anyway, I'm more mm-hmm. of a pundit. I think of myself as a pundit, kind of the web design world. So, like, I have my own thoughts about this, especially as a developer who I do. Both of those companies literally pay me money as a sponsor so I can promote their stuff. So that puts me in the middle too. But I also use both of them and like both of them, like, no joke, for real.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Like, it's like, I'm not. I hate the juxtaposition that these are against each other. I'm not sure how that exactly happened, but, you know, maybe a couple of snarky comments and that's what happens. But
yeah, I mean, what's fair is that they are different ways to build a website. And when a developer is poised at that moment, like, I'm going to build this website, what am I going to pick for it? Both of them have their incentives to get you to use their thing. So there is a little bit of inherent versus there. Both of them would prefer that they can meet your needs and help you build a website. So it's not implausible that there is a little tension there.
I think you did a good job moderating. I saw the panel at Jamstack. I loved your post on it on CSS Tricks. I think you just kind of summed up all the different areas where there's problems. And you quoted a thing I chatted in Slack, but like, I've just reading your post, I have have even more thoughts, you know, and just why I maybe like prefer Jamstack. Cause to be honest, like, it, and you said in the post, like, as you were writing it, like, we literally took down the Shop Talk Show site because we forgot to do a caching button, or we had developer mode on or something, took down the whole site. And so, like, and that's like one of the risks with WordPress. You just can accidentally take it down, you know, and Jamstack, you're probably not going to do that. Like, you know, mm-hmm. But there's so many things, like, just, you know, I struggle sometimes to work on the WordPress stuff because I'm out of practice. Like, I don't have the muscle memory to do that. And the database syncing and the everything is so different than the day-to-day application development that I usually do, you know? So, like, I'm usually doing application development. So, like, Git workflows and, you know, very simple templates, you know, no PHP loops and special loops and stuff like that. It's just local development, Git workflow, etc. But like, you know, and I think I value that, you know, but then the question is kind of, what does the user want? I know what the developer wants, but what does the user want? Like, the user, end user doesn't care, but the like content author maybe does care.
Right.
But then my personal experience is like, you know, content authors, like, they want the dream CMS. They want the, like, Cadillac of CMSs where everything is managed in there. Then they don't use it, you know? Like, they call me for fixes, you know? Or,
yeah,
can you wire up this page right or something, or the SEO plugin or whatever, you know? And so, not to, like, I've been paid to build out a dream CMS, and then I get, like, then, like, whatever, people are just like, can you do it? You know?
I
don't know.
Yeah. That's the thing that, you know, the thing that WordPress thrives on the most, which is, I'm sure, the driver of all their numbers, is that it really is a good CMS. There's a ton of crap mm-hmm. you can do with it. It's, you know, it's remarkably powerful, a remarkably huge community to extend the things that it's not capable of out of the box. I mean, it's just amazing, all the things that it can do. Even if you're listening to this and you're like, I hate it. Fine, hate it. But other people don't hate it. You know, a lot of millions of people don't. So, sorry. Okay, so I didn't even bring this up to talk about that, even though we could make 5 episodes on that, because I really honestly have a lot to say. I said most of what I wanted to say in the post. It's just called WordPress and Jamstack on CSS Tricks. The real reason I brought it up is because, you know, this was a topic in Slack and on previous shows too, was about like iPads and like you being able to insert illustrations into blog posts. You went all into the quintessential blogging mistake thing.
Yeah. I messed up. I wanted to add an illustration to a blog post and I jammed myself up for about a month. So
that was on my mind. And I had, like, not to rub it in or anything, but kind of the opposite experience. Like, I have a iPad here too. And I had that thought because of what you were saying and what we talked about in that episode, where it's like, what if I'm in the middle, you know, I'm in between two paragraphs of writing and I just want to, like, with my finger draw something because I think it will, like, make the point a little better. Now, in the WordPress and Genestack posts, there's some of that. They're really super bad. I actually should have slowed down and made them a little better digestible. But okay. I had that moment where I'm like, I'm not going to let anything slow me down. I'm just going to do this thing. So I got the iPad. I'm like, there's got to be some kind of little drawing app on here where I can do that. I'd rather draw with my finger and not anything else. Like, I have Illustrator and all kinds of stuff on my computer. I could open those things too, but I don't want to use the pen tool. I don't want to use, and I don't even want to use the pencil tool either, because the pencil tool means I'm controlling it with my mouse because I don't have a touchscreen laptop. So, like, I can't draw good that way. Not that I can draw great with my finger either, but it will be way easier to draw with my finger than the mouse. So I just look. I just, like, go to the App Store and look for crap and downloaded one called Create. Or no, it's called Concepts. And it was fine.
Concepts.
I just used, I don't know, it was my first crack at one. And I got it and I was drawing. I don't have an Apple Pencil or anything. I was just using my finger. And it had an upsell. It was free, I think. And then it had an upsell, which was like $15 or something, but I bid on it, which was export as SVG. So now I'm drawing drawing with my finger, and I click done on my drawing or whatever it is, you know, there's some UI to export. And now SVG is unlocked. That was a one-time fee forever to unlock that particular export. Yeah, I think PDF is even more expensive, which is silly, but whatever. Then what was really, I found convenient, is that it had on my, I know this is for Mackies only, there's this thing called AirPlay on Macs, which AirPlay can, like, talk between your Apple devices wirelessly or whatever. I saw my MacBook on the AirPlay export. So I'm drawing with my finger. I export to SVG right to my desktop computer. So it just lands right in my downloads folder. And I drag the damn thing onto Gutenberg and WordPress. And I'm like, there's my illustration as an SVG file in the middle of a blog post in like 20 seconds, you know? I was like, damn, I think I might have hit Dave's workflow, like, accidentally.
Well, I didn't know this did SVG. That's awesome. I kind of solved my thing, not perfectly, but I realized you can, because I type everything in Notion, right? Like, I do drafts in Notion. I moved all my drafts out of my drafts folder to Notion just because I needed, like, cross browser, not worrying about Git syncing. And then, like, I can do multiple statuses, like outlined and started, mostly done, ready, like, or just needs a once over and finished in a Deadpool. And so I have all these columns for blogging, but in Notion lets me put them in like a Kanban kind of thing. But I realized, like, oh, I can, like, add, I can pull up Notion on my iPad because I have it there, and I can add the photo, the media to that iPad. And then when I go back to my desktop, I can export it, or laptop or whatever, export it down. Mm-hmm. And I have the whole thing kind of in a nice little zip. And I did, like, movies, and I did which you have to do a little post-processing on movies with, like, Handbrake, you know, to get it all web ready. But but I use this app called Loom, L-O-O-O-M, and it's like an animated drawing app kind of thing. It's pretty cool. But and then I just used
This is cool.
It's pretty cool. But then I used a app called Paper 57.
I know that one. That one's like anything you do in it looks cool because of the brushes.
It's just like a moleskin. Yeah, it's kind of fun, but it doesn't have really layers, or like its undo is pretty naive. And so anyway, it was just kind of, I liked it, but not like, it's not perfect for web stuff, but I'm going to do this Concepts thing. So this looks great. This is exactly what I need, Chris.
That's good. That's cool.
Oh, and I can learn to draw. I want to learn to draw. Teach me how to draw.
Yeah, I don't know about the layer story or anything. I didn't get into all that fancy, but of course, after I publish it, all my drawings are saved in the app too. And I go back to it and then I start exploring more of the brushes and like the ways to watercolor color into it and stuff. I'm like, oh my God, I should have just freaking took 2 hours to learn to do this so the illustrations would have actually looked nice. And
well, that's where I got blocked too, is I was like, oh, I drew something. Ooh, yikes, buddy. Like, so I just was like, don't put that on the internet. But, you know, then it's just like, you know what, I'm just going to get over it. And so,
yeah,
gonna get over it. But no, this is really cool. I'm gonna
honestly, the airplay thing was my favorite thing. I know that's like not a huge blocker, but at least like the moving from the device to the laptop or whatever, like getting it to your blogging environment is a big deal to me. Like, I want that to feel really painless, and it was. So.
Well, and that's what's nice. You know, I could send it to a OneDrive or whatever. Yeah. You know, like I have that, but the big thing is like, does it fit into your flow? And that's sort of where I was like getting hung up on, you know, like, okay, if I export this, I have to send it over to my computer, and then I have to do it in Illustrator, and then I have to, you know, and I just was like, oh, wait, I can just drop it into Notion and then it's there. And so I'm kind of working with something while I'm like typing, you know, it's not too terrible to like import a graphic into Notion. So
yeah,
it worked out.
So. I've gotten lazier in my days too. I spent probably a decade, every image I'd ever used for anything, I would hand name it, you know, I'd call it, you know, drawing of static hosting plus services, all with dashes and lowercase and stuff. And then I would upload it somewhere and use it. And I don't know what, I guess it was, maybe I'll be able to find it easier again, or maybe there's SEO in the name of the image. I've gotten so lazy lately that I just don't even care. All those illustrations there are untitled 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 .svg. Because like, I'll put alt text in them if they need them. Like, I don't need to find them again. I feel like not that it's wasted time. Like, if y'all want to do that, fine. I'm just saying, personally, I've gotten lazy about the naming of the actual image file that I upload. To me, has like no value.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, it used to be though, like you had a space in there and it would just ruin your whole life.
Yeah, you know? That happened to me yesterday, Dave. You know what does
really?
You know what is okay to have a space in? The source for an image, like, you know.
Oh, really?
Like, image SRC can have a space to the location of, like, the folder has a space name or something. But you know what cannot? Source set.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Because it has spaces in there.
It dies on the syntax of it. So I had to re-architect the whole thing. Because I don't know. I started this little project for like a little mini website for coding fonts to demonstrate them. Mm-hmm. And it was a fun little exercise. Like, oh, we'll use Puppeteer to take screenshots of the thing and blah, blah. It's been a fun process. And I open sourced it. So some people have been contributing to it and stuff. And early on, we made the choice, like, let's make everything really named so that markdown files were like, you know, Fira code with capitals and spaces in the markdown file name and everything, which you don't see very often. But that way it's like, then the file name becomes useful to you use programmatically too, because it's like, it's the same as what goes in the at font face declaration and stuff. It was a bad idea. Don't do that. Name your images lowercase with dashes in them. Name your markdown files lowercase with dashes or underscores or something. Yeah, because it's just like the source set thing that killed us to the point where I had to rename everything to get us out of that situation. Anyway, don't be clever.
Well, yeah, it's wild how like something like naming an image wrong can turn into like, But naming it wrong once is not a problem. So when you've named it wrong 30, 40 times, and now you're like, oh man, that's like full like hour, 2 hours, and I have to get up the gumption to go work on it. Like, like I've created a 2-hour problem by just, you know, it's not even like a negligence thing. It's just like, I thought I could handle this, but then all of a sudden it's a problem, you know? So,
this episode is brought to you by Netlify. I don't know if you've noticed lately, but the United States of America is in the midst of a presidential election. And up here in Canada, where I am, we've had our own sets of elections going on. Maybe wherever you happen to be right now as you listen to this, there's an election going on. Or maybe there's information you want to make sure people from your country or maybe another specific country are made aware of when they visit your website. With Netlify, you can set up localization really easily with Netlify redirects and rewrites. Netlify's got a blog post showing how to do it with a combination of 11D and Vue, but any stack will work as the only requirements are two different HTML files. With Netlify redirects, you can show site visitors different content based on their location by adding a country condition to your redirects file. Now, whenever someone visits your Netlify hosted site and is located in the United States, for example, they'll get served the content from, say, index-us.html instead of the regular index.html. You can assign a 200 status code to keep the visitor's URL the same, while Netlify servers fetch the new page behind the scenes. Unlike a typical client-side JavaScript solution, redirecting at the edge opens up tons of localization customization while keeping our page performance and web vitals intact, especially reducing our cumulative layout shift, resulting in a better user experience. You could have customer case studies or quotes based on your visitor's location or language as an example of things that become a breeze to put in place with Netlify's redirects and rewrites. You can check it all out at netlify.com and be sure to visit their blog for some great guides and tutorials for your Netlify-hosted website. Our thanks to Netlify for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
Well, speaking of renaming files, I just had to do that the other day that... makes me want to mention another thing is that I don't have to do that often. If I had 10 files to rename, I would just rename them because I'm not that crazy of a developer where I'm like going to write a shell script to do it or something, you know. But I had like, it was like 60 or something. And I was like, I'm going to do it because I know there's apps that can do it. And there was one called Renamer for my Mac. And it just so happened to be part of my Set App subscription too, which is this like, it's this Mac specific thing where you get access to a billion apps for $9.99 or something plausible, like where any given one of these apps is probably more expensive than that. So if you need two, you're already like doing good. I have no idea how their business model works, but there you go. And there was one
like Apple Arcade for utilities.
Yeah. And there's a lot of good stuff in it. Like I've seen bundles like this before where you look through it and you're like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's 70 things to analyze your hard drive. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, I don't think so.
This particular one, though, has, I swear to God, 6-7 things that I like use anyway.
Yeah, neat.
Yeah. Okay. So Renamer was one of them and it was really well done. It was like apply this like really logical thing, like swap this text for this text in file names that you, and you just drag and drop files on there. And then it shows you the before or after as you do it. It was called Renamer. And it was really satisfying to use because one of them was even like write a regex. So you're like, now you have ultimate power, you know? And I even had to use that because there's one thing that their like built-in renaming tools like couldn't quite get. So I wrote a quick little regex as the last step and I renamed a crap load of files and it was very satisfying. And now I probably won't do it again for 2 years, but you know.
Yeah, no, it's, you're sort of, hey, that's fine. That's why you do the thing. I was going to say Windows has Power Toys, which is an old application like from Windows 95 or whatever, but Power Toys is back for Windows 10 and it has Power Renamer feature and, you know, kind of a advanced window manager. Window management's like built into Windows, like where you place your windows, but you can win arrow key to place windows, but they have a like advanced one. So if you want three columns or whatever, kind of non-symmetric columns, it does that too. So
nice. Anyway.
I was going to say too, I'm on coding-fonts.css-tricks.com.
Oh, you found it. It's not really live yet. But it's...
Oh, whoops, I spoke.
No, I don't care. Who cares? You
know? I think I saw it on a RSS somewhere, so I thought it was public. But anyway, it looks good. It's just fun.
Yeah, it's not live code, which... questionable, you know, like maybe this would have been more fun if we put actual editors in there, but the idea was like, well, there's a font like Operator Mono. I use Operator Mono a lot. It's from typography.com, you know, Heffler and co, and it's not free, so like,
oh yeah,
I don't, you know, I don't want to have a website where I'm paying for just to host one of these websites. So I wanted this to be a mixture of ones that are paid too, but I don't want to actually pay for it, you know? So, that's the whole point. So I thought instead of that, you know, we'll host the ones that we can, but for the most part, we'll just do images of the code and I don't know. Just a choice.
Well, and you know what? It reinforces my hatred of coding ligatures. So I appreciate this website. I feel very justified in my distaste for that.
That's why it's not live yet, because I think that's like a big deal, because a lot of people feel exactly the opposite. But like, we don't have a way to, like, for example, view that font with ligatures on and off, which, like, if you're going to make a website for coding fonts, shouldn't it have that kind of stuff? You know, shouldn't it show you? We had some good feedback that it should show you the difference between the, like, the one, the lowercase l, and the, I don't know, what's some other thing, a pipe, I guess, or some other things that can look really similar like that. There should be some effort made to make those look different, because it totally comes up in coding, you know? And like, is it variable or not? I think, like, we show HTML, CSS, and JavaScript in dark mode and light mode, so you get a sense for it. But even the italics doesn't have a, you know, because that's a good, I'd say 60% of these perhaps have a italic specific version. We don't do a very good job of showcasing that. It's like, there's work to be done here before it's really as useful as it could be. But even as just a list to remind people about how many options they have is neat, you know?
No, that's good. Good. Nice. Hey, we got a question. Jimmy Davis writes in, virtually all of my development work happens in WordPress, so PHP templates. I had a sort of harebrained shower thought the other day of using PHP files for CSS, style.php. The thought is I could make if statements on whether or not certain CSS gets rendered or whatever. So maybe something like is front page echo entry width 100%. And even in QStyle sheets, based on the template, is front page in QStyle, in QWP and QStyle, front page CSS, CSS slash front page CSS, yeah. And then you just like, whatever, map it to some function or something.
Yeah, that's like the first one. I kind of truncated the question, Jimmy, because I think we get the point here is that, like, if you have PHP on your server anyway, can you leverage it for CSS also? This is like, it's not unexplored, but people don't talk about this all that much. Maybe it's starting to get in the zeitgeist a little bit more because of CSS and JS stuff. I know some people like CSS and JS for that very specific reason, is that they want to do programmatic things in the CSS. You see this in React with props a lot. You say, like, if you send in the keyword big, then if big, then use that, you know, use font size 3 rem or something. You want to have a little conditional logic in your CSS. That jives with some developers' mindset, and I don't blame them. That's kind of cool. But we typically haven't been able to do quite that kind of clear logic with CSS in the past. Now, this is a weird, interesting thing. You can totally do link rel style sheet href style.php. As long as that file comes back with the right content type in the headers, it'll work. You can write PHP code in your CSS.
Yeah, you know, I'm having like flashbacks to many years when we talked about this, and like, I feel like the conclusion we came to was you can totally do this, but in some ways you're kind of creating your own, like, SAS, basically. Like, you're creating your own custom pre-parser of some way, you know, you might be losing some of the advantages of CSS, to be honest. Like, in your brain, you're like, I'm adding value only. And that's true. But you might be, removing some value, because one of the, like, bonuses of CSS is it's a single file. It gets, like, cached. It gets, like evaluated. That's the big key thing too. Like the browser's like, oh, I've seen front page CSS. I know exactly what's in it. I'm just going to evaluate. So if you like are modifying the CSS just a tad every single template or whatever, like you're not going to get any of that caching value, because the CSS is going to say, or the browser is going to say, like, that's a whole new thing.
Well, that brings up the good point, is you actually need to teach it. You need to tell the browser not to cache it, because it will probably try by default.
Yeah.
So you need to tell it not to, because if it does, then all your dynamics are gone. So you're really shooting yourself in the foot here, that there's no caching at all. You've turned CSS file into a thing that PHP needs to run on, which is non-trivial. It's a very different ballgame than just serving a static asset. And it cannot be cached. And it's single origin. It cannot be CDN either. So it's like you lost a crap load of value of CSS by doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, so what I would say is like maybe do this, but like you might have to be clever in your CSS architecture, like have a global thing of stuff that doesn't change. And then just the page CSS where things might kind of change. That's maybe that's dynamically negotiated. It's hard to say without like knowing your exact setup, but you know, in theory, maybe like Varnish or something in front of your Cloudflare could maybe cache what front page CSS spit out at one point. But you know, I think that could work, but I think I would probably make sure you have a global and then a page level kind of thing. That would be my advice.
Yeah. In the little snippet that Jimmy put here, where it says if front page, then entry with 100% or whatever, is front page is just a little bit of logic that says if it's the front page or not. You know what else is? WordPress, by default, in pretty much all themes, has a thing called body underscore class as a function. And it's put on the body tag. And it will say, it will output a bunch of interesting classes depending on where you are on the site. You probably already know this, Jimmy. You live in WordPress, so I'm not trying to tell you something you don't know.
Like, is single or whatever.
Yeah, but it'll say is home, or it might just say home or front page or stuff. There'll be stuff that you could use. That's conditional logic, too, at the selector level. So you write body.home space entry width equals 100%. It accomplishes the exact same thing. Now, I know in your mind, you're probably like, well, that was just a simple example. I'm talking about like testing for the presence of a custom meta field or something. You know, like in your mind, the PHP opens a lot more doors than just what page I'm on. And you're right, it totally does. But not a good idea. And Jimmy, in his question, even mentioned there's a 2009 post on CSS tricks that shows you how you could do this, which is fine. I'm going to leave that there. That's good historical information. It's not like there's, you know, the web's a big place. You know, it's possible that this is useful to somebody. And I'm not going to take that away from you, but just heavy caveat warnings from both Dave and I here. The post was about variables, though, like literally using like $ PHP variables as CSS variables. Now, that was kind of like, I probably wrote that in my mind before I started using SAS. So to me, it was like, oh, cool, you know, now we can have this thing. Now the value of variables in CSS largely comes from your preprocessor, or these days, of course, CSS custom properties.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would probably try to leverage that new stuff. But, you know, I don't want to stop you, but I also think like, I think you run the risk of making a machine that only you understand how it works, you know, and there's kind of some value too in like embracing conventions like SAS or conventions like even modern CSS. So it's sort of, I don't know, can somebody Google and find out what this style.php is all about? Like that's sort of maybe the like, you know, big question, but maybe you don't care about that. I don't know. All right. Hopefully you answered your question. Yeah.
And thanks for writing in, because it's a fun thing to talk about, you know?
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by AWS Amplify. Oh, so cool. Glad to have them as a sponsor. You know, AWS itself has all kinds of stuff to run websites. You know, it has all kinds of storage thing and hosting things, and it has auth and databases and S3 buckets and just all kinds of offerings. AWS is kind of like a collection of those to help you build websites. Maybe one of the ways you can think about it is it's like the CLI. So you add the CLI, meaning that now on your command line, you can type stuff and do stuff. And it helps you scaffold out the things that you need. So for example, if you need storage, you can type amplify add storage, and through the CLI, it'll walk you through the choices of how to add that to your project. Do you need like a GraphQL API? Type amplify add API, and we'll walk you through choices to get it all set up. So for example, you want
a GraphQL API, because you're building an app that needs that. And it's not opinionated about what kind of app you're going to build. Not in that way. It'll just help you get data storage set up, whatever you're trying to build. So it'll use AWS AppSync, which is, you know, part of this Amplify thing, which is going to get you this real-time data storage through GraphQL that's really, really cool. It helps sometimes to have someone hold your hand a little bit and figure out how to configure all that stuff. If you want to add auth, well, Amazon Cognito is the thing that does auth, but how do you get it into your app? Well, Amplify will help you do that through its CLI tool. Now, a big part of this is the AWS Amplify console, which is, it's also your hosting. It also can help you be part of the Jamstack approach to building a website, meaning that you can deploy from the command line as well out to static web hosting, you know, CDN back super fast web hosting, and then, you know, do the rest of your services Jamstack style on top of that. So nice, you know, and it connects to Git repos too. That's part of this like expectation that we're starting to have as developers is like, I want to, you know, work in feature branches, but when I push to main or master or some branch that we've decided is our main deployment branch, that's kind of a protected branch. And when that happens, CI/CD runs, you know, Amplify has CI/CD built into it. It's really full featured. It has all the stuff that you expect for DX, you know, it's a pretty nice thing overall. So check it out. All right, Tyler Williams here saying, if you had the opportunity to build a collaboration process between like sales and marketing, or, you know, a team of designers and a team of developers or whatever, two different groups at the company, assuming your teams have to be managed somewhat separately, what would your ideal pipeline look like? Like, you know, from development to deployment or whatever. I guess that's pretty development specific. But I like the base question is like, you have an opportunity to build a collaboration process. What does that look like?
You know, this is hard. And I've definitely been in situations where this did not go well. You know what I mean? Like, it's in sort of like marketing kind of has their own concerns than product or whatever. You know, I for me, it's like I think core to the process is you need everyone on the same tools, like the same Slack or whatever.
There you go.
People in the same tools. Because I've been in a situation where marketing was not on Slack and it was like, cool. Well, Jeff, could you run to the other side of the building and ask them like what they think about this idea? You know, like it made collaboration impossible. For me, you know, it's gotta be around prototypes. You know what I'm saying? Like it's going to be about prototypes. Cause it comes from like a phobic reaction too, to like, have you been in a situation where like somebody shows a PowerPoint with like some design that you've never seen and they're like, we're launching this quarter or whatever. And you're like, what? Like news to me? Or like, we redesigned the whole brand and you're like, what? Like that's news to me. It sounds like I'm going to be accountable for some of that, you know, like,
so no surprises,
no surprises. Like, and like everything gets shopped in a prototype and not in a PowerPoint so that you can vet out the idea before it's even like shipped. And maybe that is like some, you know, you have a team, some designers and developers and whatever. I work with two designers and I am one developer and, you know, that's fine. It works out. Like the balance is probably off because they can come up with more ideas than I can code or whatever. But, but I think you just have to have like these, you have to be able to prototype and kind of explore ideas in code. I heard a good quote the other day, like prototypes are about contrast, like comparing the existing idea to a bad idea or a good idea, you know, like you need prototypes for contrast. And so so it'd be all about prototyping, and you know, is there a pipeline? Like, I mean, at some point, the work is probably kind of waterfall-y. Like a business person comes up with some idea, the designer designs some idea, the developer codes some idea. But ideally, in my process, I think those things aren't under the pressure to launch right away. Like, it's like under the pressure to like figure out if this is even possible or whatever. So work together very loosely and then iterate as you go forward. Or as Shigeru Miyamoto says, get the fundamentals solid first and then do what you can with as time and ambition allow.
That's great. You know, we just had Natalia Shelburne on too, who was talking a lot about, you know, the dumbness of calling people unicorns at work and how really what that means is just you're cross-functional. And I keep thinking about that episode a lot, and that really should be a part of how you describe yourself and how you're talked about at work is like, what are your cross-function abilities? So if you need to be replaced or you need other people like that, you can talk about it. Be like, this person is a designer, but they have a lot of skill in collaboration with marketing. They like really grok each other or whatever. And so I think like, if you understand that and can use that and talk about that at work, then if you're building a collaboration process, you can say, we need people that are cross trained or work together well across different teams in these specific ones. Like, we need some cross marketing, cross design. We need some cross developer, cross whatever. We need a project manager who's good at talking to stakeholders or whatever. Like, you can start to talk about it in a clear way so that you don't accidentally build one team that has no cross-functional people on it. And then you're like, oh shoot, whoops.
No, I think that's definitely true. I wish it was more, because I think we're pushed towards specialization, you know, like be the ultra 10x dev, you know. It's like, well, can I get a 5x dev and 5x design? Is that, can I request a balance or whatever? You know, like,
you dang well can, Dave, because that person's going to get it done too. They're going to get crap out the door, which is the ultimate thing that matters. Like, I don't care if you're a 10x dev, if you're not contributing to getting this project actually completed.
You know, it's bad. Is a 10x dev with a 1x design. Well, now you're shipping 10 times the 1X, and that still equals one, but it's less than ideal. You know, like I think you need like some balance and some shape. And I wish that was really thought about in teams. I feel like the bigger the company gets or whatever, it's engineers are just seen and designers are just seen as like hot swappable, disposable human resources, you know? And it's like, oh, you're a dev, right? Here, do the whole website, you know? And it's like, well, I'm like a very specific dev. Like, I work on SVGs or whatever, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like there's a gap in like describing people, the shape of people or what they're good at, you know? And I think Natalia's like design engineer kind of concept is actually pretty awesome, just for saying like engineering and design, that's the overlap. So like, that's what I'm good at. So let's talk about that. I feel like that's really helpful.
I feel like these days it's becoming more and more my thing. Like, I kind of want to be cross-functional everything. Have a little talent on all this stuff and then know when to apply it. You know, like, I'm not that great of a designer, but there's moments where I'm like, I need to design something right now because I can sense that it is the missing piece to get people talking about this in the way that I know I need them to get. So I'm going to use some design skill right now to put some stuff together. And maybe it's not the final thing. Maybe it's just a really loose prototype, but that's what's needed right now to push this thing along. Or like, there's these developers working really hard on something. I'm going to use my cross-functional ability of my my Rolodex, because I kind of have one after all these years. Or I'm going to talk to some of the right people involved here and get some perspective or some help or something, because just throwing engineering at this problem isn't helping right now. there's like an, I feel like talking is maybe more helpful, or pulling in some other help is helpful. At the same time, sometimes development work needs to get done. I can help with that. I can do it. I can do code reviews. I can, you know, I can attempt to do some management and some project management. I can write docs, you know, like I have, and only this is just built through lots of years of having to do it. That's how I'm actually useful. Is my cross-function ability. Like it's like an eye-opening moment for me. So I'm like not particularly good at anything, but am good at being hyper cross-functional.
You know? Well, and I definitely like one of my untitled roles at Paravel is social chair. I'm the social chair. Not that my other two coworkers are antisocial, but I do the meetups. I do the conferences more than they do, you know, like
yeah.
I host a podcast where I talk to people that's like puts me in a place where it's like I've talked to a lot of people where I am talking, and very often it's like somebody's like, oh man, what's the deal with the details element, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, I actually am in a thread with Rob Dodson. Let me just ping him real quick and see what the situation or whatever, you know, right. It's like I have, you know, connections or conversations open with people about topics or whatever. And so like can ask them directly, like, what's going on with this? Like, is this actually going to be fixed like in the browser this century or this quarter or what, you know, like, so, and I think that's a good skill to have. How do you put that on a resume? I don't know. I run my mouth a lot, but maybe that's a skill to put down. So I don't know. Hopefully that helped, Tyler. I wish I had like a one designer, one developer, but I would. Can I also throw in one piece into that mix? A 10x manager. Booyah.
Yeah.
What does that even mean? But I think that's. I think of things in terms of bottlenecks and theory of constraints and things like that. But like, if you just have like a manager who doesn't get it or is OTL out to lunch, like, what do? Like, you're stuck, you know, or they keep choosing the cheapest, easiest option or whatever, like, you know, rather than like investing in the tech debt or whatever, like that sucks. Like that you can't, like that person is only seeing short-term gains, you know? And so like, how do you do that? You know? So I feel like that person is a, that's a tough role. So that's a tough, like, if you don't have that person managing well, it hurts the team too.
That was a good question. Thank you, Tyler. Carlos Zepeda writes in about, what's a good solution for self-hosting videos, like MP4 files, essentially, and then streaming them on your personal website. The idea being to have control over the video, not depend on YouTube or Vimeo or, you know, a typical video host. Possible or too much work?
It is possible, very much so. You can put an MP4 on your in your images folder. I do that all the time. How much time you got? Because I can talk about this for a while. Here's your problems. You're going to have to encode it correctly. Like, and there's a handbrake. Let me give you my handbrake settings.
Are we down to just one file?
I deleted handbrake. I messed up. Oh no. I had to reformat my computer and I don't have handbrake
anymore. It's freeware.
Yeah, but you know, I forgot what buttons I had set. But you need to run it through, and I think I do the iPod optimized or whatever. Or else, for some reason, Mobile Safari is like, I don't know what a video is, even though you made it in like MP4, which is like an Apple proprietary format, whatever. Like, it's anyway, like occasionally Apple will just be, I don't know what that video is, but
well, we're only a couple years away from having to make an AUG and an MP4 and a MOVE and a, you know,
yeah, and the new AVI, no, that's the old AVI. There's a new AVIF, whatever AVIF is made on, AVM or something
that movies. Can do video too. Or it was started as video?
Yeah, it started as video, I think the algorithm. And that's actually like what a lot of YouTubes are encoded in. Okay, so step one, you can put them in any folder on the internet that a web host has. here's things that are kind of required, at least for MP3s and videos as well, is content chunking, which is like a server header, which is basically like, can the server request the content chunk at 1 minute of your video and retrieve the 1 minute mark down? It's a little weird, and not stuff you have to worry about, but you need content chunking support on your server. And
you do in Safari only, right? Or all?
Probably Safari for sure, because it's the most picky, right?
Very much so.
But then, you may need it just in general, and it's probably going to save you a lot of bandwidth, because if somebody has to download the whole 30-60 megabyte video every time, right, you're going to just burn through your bandwidth. And so that's the other problem. You got to figure out where you're going to host this in a way that doesn't burn through your whole budget. You know, we were hosting MP3s, 40 megabyte MP3s for Shop Talk Show, and we got hit with $200 a month hosting bills. And that was like brutal for us, a podcast that made approximately $200 or whatever. And so, so like, that's another concern you have. Me, the videos I do are usually like muted screen caps and stuff like that. So it's really like 800, it's smaller than a GIF, and it's smaller than an image sometimes, because it's just very simple, like videos. So that's what I tend to upload. But I also recently, because Mike our Pasio, I believe that's your last name, Mike, was asking about like self-hosting your own Twitch, because Twitch is doing this whole kind of like demonetizing people now, you know, and ooh, DCMAing people and stuff, just like YouTube and all that. But they there's actually solutions to like build a streaming server, and you could deploy it to DigitalOcean and stuff like that. But then you're going to be kind of hit with their bandwidth caps. So that's like another solution too. You could like find these like, you know, basically Docker containers that do all this stuff.
Oof, that sounds like a lot. I mean, I think there's probably a middle ground between your web host and YouTube, or building a self-hosted streamer, which is use a host, you know. Like, I know I mentioned Cloudinary a lot, but they do video pretty well. So you can also just chuck it on Cloudinary. Then you can do their format auto too, meaning you don't even have to handbrake it first. Just throw up whatever you got, then put their format auto on, and then do it that way.
Well, then I would do that.
Yeah. And they'll serve the right headers and stuff. We have an open bug. I shouldn't even tell you this, but it's just in the spirit of on CodePen, where if you upload a video file, we put it in an S3 bucket, you know, because that's where like all the files in the whole world are stored, you know, and then we proxy it through a Cloudflare worker, because that's going to, you know, then it's on the Cloudflare network and the bandwidth will be cheaper and it will be edge cached and super fast and all that stuff. Works for 99.9% of stuff in the world, but we have an open bug, and this is fixable, we'll get to it, that Safari requires some special chunking headers, like you were talking about, mm-hmm, and they should be being passed along through our little proxy, but they're not somehow, which makes them a totally bomb in some versions of Safari, the newer ones. So it's like, that sucks. And, you know, like I said, we'll get that fixed, but it's like, it's a required thing. Like, the S3 bucket is serving them. So why aren't they going through the worker? Okay. I don't know why, but
that's weird, because S3 should be all, if you could watch it once, it should be working, but.
Well, right. But we really do kind of like manipulate the request a little bit on the way. So something we're doing wrong, no problem. But that's a thing, you know? So Carlos, it's unclear to me whether you're talking about like, you know, and 287 kilobyte, 440 second screenshot kind of thing, or like a 8 minute movie. Cause to me, they are very different. Like the little ones, I don't even think about it. I just kick them up and put them in a video tag, and who cares, you know? But the longer form things, I tend to do a little bit more effort behind. And, you know, you said, I don't want YouTube or Vimeo, but just for the listening audience, there's a lot of advantage to using YouTube or Vimeo.
it's going to play, period. Like, it's going to work for sure because they make it their business. It's going to have a pretty nice little player that has, like, full screen that will work. It's going to have, you know, it's going to show the title overlay and just, it's going to have some nice UX behind it because that's the business they're in. And it's going to be free, which is also pretty substantially cool. So there's a lot of advantage that I get, though, that, you know, you might just not like having a third party on your site or whatever. Not to mention one iframe from YouTube is hefty as hell. Super hefty.
There's light embed web components out there. I think Paul Irish made one. Somebody else made one, but it's like very...
I used it on chriscoyer.net, a clever one. I forget who to credit for it exactly, but I'm having a post about it soon to remind people of it because I think it's very clever. You still have an iframe, but in your iframe, you use a thing called source doc, not to be confused with source set, but source doc on an iframe says, whatever's in this string, consider it HTML and render it as if the iframe had an href on it, but it's not an href, it's source doc. So it's like a full HTML document. So in this source doc is a little bit of CSS. That just does a little bit of fancy dancing to do it. And then inside there's an IMG tag. And the IMG tag uses the YouTube API, which there's just a URL format that will give you the screen,
the thumb
of it.
The poster.
So all this is an iframe that has a poster of the video. And then there's a little play button, which is just a Unicode glyph that is absolutely positioned right in the middle of it. So what's cool about this is that it behaves just like a YouTube embed. So like if you have like fitvids.js on your site or something, it's not going to be hurt by this. It's still a little iframe of a movie and stuff. But what the play button does is it links to the video in a way where it just starts autoplaying. So functionally, it's 100% like a YouTube video, only it loads no JavaScript. It doesn't load the like megabytes of crap that from one YouTube video.
I love it.
You still just click it and it plays. Yeah, it's very clever, I think.
Give it to me. So that might be an option if you hate the thing or you want your own styling. I don't know. The video's cool, but then like big scale video, that's hard. So that's harder and you need servers.
Yeah. And then there's that kind of like Cloudinary middle approach. Cloudinary isn't the only player there, but I just trust what they do with video. It's pretty cool. You know, I had a thought that I forgot to mention about all the cross workflow stuff. This is a good recommendation too. So I don't read many books, unfortunately. Just I need to fix myself. I'm not proud of this fact, but it's just a thing. There's a great author named Lindy West. You know her? She's a funny writer, but did some time at one point as like kind of a film critic, I think. I don't know her whole life story, so I shouldn't say it. I just read her book. The book is called, and I know we're not going to bleep this out because it's actually the name of the book. So I'm just quoting something. The book is called Shit Actually, kind of like Love Actually.
Love Actually?
Movie. Yeah. Okay. But nice. She hates the movie Love Actually like the most of any movie to possibly hate. And loves the movie The Fugitive. This is the best. All the right. Fugitive is the best possible movie, and Love Actually is the worst nice possible movie.
This is a good reality.
But
this
whole book is her just essentially pooping on movies of like the 90s. And so she watches them and then just shreds them, just shreds them to pieces about how awful of movies they are for the comedic value of it. Like nobody can do it like Lindy West. Like she just eviscerates these movies and it's hilarious, you know? To me, it's like if you follow Jen Schiffer's writing and personality and stuff, it's kind of like if Jen Schiffer, to me, wrote a full-length movie shredding books, you know? It's the same kind of like, I don't know, modern hilariousness that she brings to the table, I think.
Oh, man. I'm like afraid she's going to ruin my favorite movies. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, she kills it. She destroys Harry Potter and Face Off and... I don't know. There's a ton of them, is it?
She's gone too far. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Bad Boys.
The Honey, I Shrunk the Kids one is great. It's a short one, too. Anyway, I just couldn't recommend it more. I listened to it on my little commute, which I normally don't have one, but we're getting our floors done at the house. So we're staying away from the house for a moment while that happens. And
And so I have a commute in and I'm listening to this and just falling over laughing. It's very funny.
I need a good comedy book. So let's see if I can snag it here on the old. Oh, I'm going to place a hold. All right.
Well, she reads it, her own book. That's always a good sign, right?
That's always the best. Yeah.
Well, oh, and cool. I brought that up not just to tell her how funny it was, but she has a little moment in there where she's talking about exceptional people. This is only like 30 seconds of the book. So if you listen to it, let me know if you catch it because it's really quick. But she craps on the idea of anybody being too good at their job, like too good of a cop or something, because then the problem is that they're just called in and they just work their magic and like solve the problem or whatever, instead of like working together as a team. Now, she says it much more eloquently than I do and makes good points on it, but it was a lot like what Natalia Shelburne was saying too, that like, don't treat these exceptional people as being too exceptional. It was in the context of Top Gun, by the way. So if you're in the
right, like, you know, yeah, like you
don't be Tom Cruise or you're Kill Goose, you know, is the point.
Well, no, you basically have a limited number of expert specialists. Don't go through them. So, not for no reason. So, no, that's, yeah, no, it's, I'm going to be thinking about this Tyler Williams question for quite a while here. So just like, you know, what's the ideal setup, but you know, I'm still just on prototypes.
I know.
I got my dream team. There's actually, here's a documentary. If you want, if you got Disney Plus, my friend Jerry Chen sent me to this one, but it's basically the making of Frozen 2. Kind of a wild card, but it's a really interesting story about how they made.
Well, of course, Frozen, it's called 2. Into the Unknown. Hilarious.
Into the Unknown.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, it's a, like a 6-part documentary, but the first episode is 40 minutes and it's literally about 3 seconds of footage.
Wow.
So just wrap your whole brain around that. Like they did a whole documentary, like hour long show or whatever, about basically like 3 seconds of footage. And so, and how that works with the music and the, you know, the voice talent, the computer animators, the, you know, kind of graphics specialists and stuff like that. And so, it's just very cool. And the story, like the whatever producers and writers and everything. And so anyway, the whole thing just, it's, I don't know. I got a lot of inspiration from it. Just like how to like build a team or whatever. Like how do you make a gigantic movie like Frozen 2 and make changes 6 months before it comes out? Because they play tested it in front of kids. Spoiler. And the kids were like, I don't get it. And they're like, oh no, we have to change it. So might explain why it's a little bit of a weird movie, but a little disjointed, but it's still a good movie. So
yeah, I'm a fan. It's you know, now that I've seen them both, I don't know, into the double digits, if not triple.
yeah.
But it's,
we're blessed with daughters in particularly, not that your sons can't watch it, because my son does watch it and I watch it, but you know, it's in high demand, but it's just such a good funny show. Like everyone, if it's on, everyone will just sit through it because it's just like, this is funny. Like it's a good show.
It is funny. I like it. Everything will make sense when I'm older. That's a good one.
Yeah. Some good ones.
Okay.
Right. We should wrap it up. All right. Thank you everybody for downloading this and your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star, heart, favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at shoptalkshow.com for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, hover shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. I haven't checked it out in a while, but maybe I'll have to see if it's popping off or not. So hopefully. Chris, you got anything else you'd like to say?
I do, actually. One more thing. There's some jobs. We haven't had done a job thing in a while, so here's some jobs.
Listeners of Shop Talk Show are familiar with WordPress and Jetpack, and the company behind that all is Automattic, and they're hiring. Automattic is a company that has got the remote work thing figured out, and so you'll hit the ground running at an organization that's already been working fully distributed for over 15 years. Their tagline on their job page is, "Want to make the web a better place for more than a billion people each month? We're hiring." So if that sounds like a company you'd like to work for, here's a position they've got open for you. And there's many others as well that you can check out. They've got a job for a senior product designer in the mobile department at Automattic, where you'll help take WordPress, SimpleNote, and other native apps for Android and iOS to the next level. You'll join their mobile team to work on these apps and collaborate with over 65 designers across their various products. Some of the things they're looking for are a keenness for identifying user needs, flexibility to design in low and high fidelity, the ability to integrate feedback, validate and iterate on our products while being mindful of customers, contributors, and insights gleaned by the support teams, familiarity with both Google's material design guidelines and Apple's human interface guidelines and the role they play in native app design, a genuine interest in design and prototyping tools and familiarity with development, and of course, familiarity with remote work or at least an excitement to try it. So be sure to follow the links in the show notes to the job board for the full details of the senior product designer job position. And there's many others there as well if that isn't one that you're after to check out.
And chopdogshow.com.
ShopTalkShow.com.
Into the Shop Talk.